So this evening, as you can see, the question is on, did Jesus actually exist? Did he actually exist?
Well, hopefully by the end of this evening, you'll be able to answer that question with a certain degree of certainty.
Yeah, so we hope that you'd be able to say yes by the end of the night. But even if you leave this evening and you just have more questions and answers, like, just ask one of us. We might not have all the answers. Well, we definitely do not have all of the answers.
Yeah.
But just ask and we can all learn.
Or if you have, as we sort of mentioned earlier, if you guys have any other sort of burning questions, like maybe, you know, like angels, what's the deal with angels? You know, I'd really like to know a bit about that. Can we talk about that? You know, and like, if you just drop us a message with a question, we'll keep it totally anonymous. You know, you can ask us the questions and we can bring it to Cafe Theology. And then, you know, ideally we'd all be able to grill Jamie and Gracie about it, who are...
Not me, just
most,
Jamie.
Just Jamie, who are the most, you know, theologically knowledgeable.
But not me, just Jamie.
For some reason, I'm here.
I don't... The Q&A bit always absolutely terrifies me because you guys always ask really hard questions. But I just thought, first, I wondered, Caleb, if you want to share a bit of your testimony, because I remember what you said to me when we first met. One of the first things you said to me, part of your testimony, was about looking into the evidence of Jesus. So I wondered if you want to share that.
Yeah. So one of my earliest memories as a kid is I went camping in North Wales with my family during the summer holidays. And I remember it must have been at about midnight, I went outside to go to the toilet and I was only like a little kid and I just looked up and I just saw, you know, all of the stars. You know, when you see those like really incredible photos of like the Milky Way just like laid out before you, and I just saw that in front of me. And I think that really set me on this sort of quest for, you know, is there something more than just what we have? And so I had that really burning desire to find out, you know, well, you know, what is there behind all of this? And I was very blessed to grow up in church. You know, I had a family who went to church and that sort of educated me with the knowledge of the stories. But a lot of the sort of context was lacking. You know, you hear all these names like Nehemiah or like Jonah, or and you think, well, you know, that happened in Bethsaida. Where is Bethsaida? You know, that I don't know this place. Whilst to the, you know, to the Israelites, that's probably like saying, oh, you know, that's like happening in Carnforth. You know, I know Carnforth. You know, I've been there a few times. And so it's more real for them. And I wanted it to become real for me as well. And so I really started like researching it a little bit, looking into it, trying to understand it. And I did... I don't know if you guys have heard of Walk Through the Bible. They put on a session of Walk Through the Old Testament and like going through all of the different contexts. And that was really interesting. But I think that still doesn't really give you that understanding of the personality of God and of Jesus.
Yeah. So. And I think you said as well, so with me coming to know Jesus and with you coming to know Jesus, I think we have quite different experiences, because mine is very much like I had an encounter with the Holy Spirit. And for me, I was like, okay, I'm absolutely sold. Like, I'm all in for this. But for you, it was a bit more of like you went through quite like a logical progression,
yeah,
didn't you?
I study physics, for those of you who don't know me. So, and the more and more I study physics, the more and more I'm like, you know, the genius that it takes to even describe the world that we live in, let alone, you know, imagine what sort of genius it would take to actually create the system itself. And so working from that point, I started, you know, I thought it was rather logical that there would be at least some sort of creator. And then I, you know, I knew about, you know, Jesus and the God of the Bible. And so I, you know, put the two and two together and it all sort of just fell into place as it should, I would say. So...
Yeah, so we've got a few questions that we're going to go through this evening. And the first one being is that obviously we have the Bible, and if you look through Mark, Luke, John, Matthew, I did that the wrong order completely. But if you look through those Gospels, you read of the accounts of Jesus's life and the things he did. But are there any like other accounts, or is there any other evidence other than the Bible for the existence of Jesus?
Yeah, there's quite a lot. Actually, there is rather a lot. I've picked sort of three main sort of big people. So the first was this guy called Flavius Josephus. who was a Jewish historian and military leader. So he's different to Joseph of Arimathea. I was getting a bit confused when I was first reading about this.
Do you want to just say who Joseph of Arimathea is as
well? He was the guy who got Jesus' body down off the cross and then, you know, bought the tomb and put him in there. So this guy, though, this other Flavius Josephus, he was born in 37 AD and he wrote four main works around 100 AD, which was towards the end of his life. And he wrote a particular one called Antiquities of the Jews, which is sort of a very well-known historical document, and there's lots in that. But there's a particular section called the Testimonium Flavium, or Flavianum, and that references Jesus in particular. Another one that I think is quite...
Hang on, can we go back into that a little bit as well? I feel like I want to know a little bit more about that. So when you say that it went in, like, talked about Jesus, like, was this guy a Christian? Was he not a Christian?
No, he was not a Christian.
Yeah.
He really did not like Jesus.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the... He was a person who was trying to accumulate power for himself, I think, from what I can remember.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's important as well to note that actually he wasn't a Christian. So not only is there evidence for Jesus coming from a Christian, of someone who has had their life transformed by him, but also there are people who are very much not Christians, don't want to follow this guy, and they're actually saying, actually, Jesus did exist. That's when you've got to be like, hang on a second, what's going on here?
Yeah, but not in the sort of... that it's when they say, oh, you know, Jesus did exist, it's not in the way... It's like in a more commonplace sort of way, in the same way that you would say, like, reference maybe the king or the queen. You know, you'd make a reference to them in writing, or, you know, if somebody was writing about them, if they had a journal, you'd write about the day the queen died. And it's those sorts of documents that we have. So these are like more normal, more sort of commonplace documents, as opposed to saying like, oh, this guy definitely existed, which would look sort of more made up and counterfeit, you know. So
that's really interesting. And who is the other one you've got as well?
Yeah, so the other one I've got, who's a bit bigger, is this guy called Tacitus. He was a Roman historian and politician, and he's, you know, quite high up. I think he was a senator, so in the sort of power structure of Rome. And he really noted down, he wrote two significant works. So there's the Histories and the Annals. And in, I think it's the Histories, it's the Annals, and it was written about the lives of the different Roman emperors, sort of starting off with I think it was Augustus, and going all the way through to all the way to the end. So, and one of the emperors he writes about is Nero, who is quite a cruel emperor. So he's very noted for being oppressive of Christians. And there's this quote which I've got here. And there was a great fire in Rome in 64 AD. And that was, the public basically believed that Nero had started the fire, but Nero blamed the Christians for it. So I quote this, but all human efforts and all the lavish gifts of the emperor and the propitiations, so that's appeasing of the gods, did not banish the sinister belief that the conflagration, so that's the fire, was the result of an order. Consequently, to get rid of the report, Nero fastened the guilt and inflicted the most exquisite tortures on a class hated for their abominations, called Christians by the populace. Christus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius at the hands of one of our procurators, Pontius Pilate, and a most mischievous superstition, thus checked for the moment, again broke out, not only in Judea, the first source of the evil, but even in Rome, where all things hideous and shameful from every part of the world find their centre and become popular. Accordingly, an arrest was first made of all who pleaded guilty. Then upon their information, an immense multitude was convicted, not so much of the crime of firing the city, so setting it on fire, as of hatred against mankind. So that's book 15, chapter 44 of the Annals. So we have this, you know, big historical event, great fire, you know, sort of like the Great Fire of London, basically. You know, people would write about it, people know about it, you know, and we've got this direct reference. The Christians are blamed, and they're called Christians because of this guy, Christ, who was crucified by Pontius Pilate.
Yeah, and So I live with, if anyone knows him, Pastor Marcus. So he's the pastor of New Life. And who is the guy? What was the fact Marcus told you? It's like, if you're talking on did Jesus actually exist, you have to mention this old fact. Do you remember what it was? No. Okay.
I don't remember.
He did mention it this afternoon. He said that there's actually more evidence for...
Oh, yeah, this yeah, one, yeah.
Can you remember now?
There's more... There's basically, the whole point is that there's more historical evidence for Jesus than for Julius Caesar. And the whole idea of that is that in terms of the all of the documents and the records that we have, a lot of the stuff for Jesus was written, you know, within 100 years of him, his actual life, which historically is like incredibly, that's like remarkable. And the point for Caesar is that there are, I think there are two documents like recording him. And one of them was talking about him winning a battle. And then the second one is like 600 years on from that, talking about him again, like when he said, the die is cast. It's like this famous quote. And you, people aren't even really sure if he said that or not. So,
yeah, and people like take, like, I don't know if anyone would, but I can't remember his name now. What's he called?
Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar. I was thinking Augustus Caesar. I don't know where I got that from.
That's a different...
But Julius Caesar, like, I wouldn't, like, bat an eyelid if you told me he was, like, a historical person. I'd be like, yeah, sure. But it's so fascinating, actually, when you realise that there is more evidence for Jesus and more accurate evidence. And I don't know if anyone's read it before. Has anyone read Case for Christ by Lee Strobel? Anyone read it? That is such a good book. If there's any book that you read in 2025, highly recommend Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. This goes into this stuff a lot deeper. But yeah, how trustworthy are the Gospels? But first, do you want to explain what the Gospel is? Because Gospel can be a bit confusing.
So sometimes. Gospel is, it means the good news. I think it translates from one of our old English languages. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, it means good news.
And essentially, there are accounts of Jesus's life. So there are four main ones in the Bible. So that's the synoptic Gospels, which are basically just the really similar ones. So that's Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And there are...
And John. Can't forget John.
But John is the extra one. Oh, which
okay.
Is
I
not
thought you were
the
forgetting him.
Gospel.
So don't forget John.
And they're referred to as the canonic Gospels. So that basically just means they're part of the Bible. You know, we include them. We've all read them. You know, they're so similar that some chapters are pretty much the same word for word, which is incredible as well. And the trustworthiness of the Gospels are quite, important, because, you know, our entire faith is based on this guy's life, you know, and what he did and what he said and the consequences of that. So we need to carefully examine, you know, how trustworthy these books are. And there are several criteria that are sort of used to judge these books. And I'm just going to go through a few of them, and then you can sort of think through the Gospels in your mind. And if you haven't read them, maybe we can discuss it later as one of our points.
Yeah, we also have a few copies of Luke's Gospel, and I think we've got John's Gospel as well. So if you want one of those at the end, just come and chat to me or Caleb, and we can give you one to take home.
Yeah. So our first criteria is sort of dissimilarity. So if it opposes Judaic teachings, then it's likely an authentic saying of Jesus. So Jesus, in his whole life, he was very sort of counter Judaism. He was very revolutionary, very against the Pharisees. For an example of that would be his controversial interpretation of the Judaic law on the Sermon on the Mount, where he takes the Mosaic law and he says, no, guys, you're doing it wrong. You know, this is how it should have been. You know, you're focusing too much on the details, but it's about the principles at heart here. So we've also got the, you know, criteria of embarrassment. So it's unlikely that, you know, the writers of the Gospels would have put in there anything that would have been embarrassing to them. So a great example of this is Peter in the courtyard when he denies Christ three times. You know, why would you do that? If you're trying to say this guy's real, you wouldn't really embarrass yourself, you know. Or like the disciples fleeing after Jesus's crucifixion. You know, they say that history is written by the victor, you know, and if Christianity has survived this long, you know, like, it wouldn't make sense if it was made up for them to, you know, put themselves down in the story. They're bigging themselves up quite a lot. There's also just a sort of a fairly normal one, which is, it's called multiple attestation, but it basically means, like, you know, if you've one person saying something, you know, oh, that's probably nonsense. If you've got like 40 people saying something, you know, okay, this is probably serious. Yeah. And so after Jesus was resurrected, it says that over 400 people were visited by him, and he appeared to many people over 40 days. And so that's such a significant number that, you know, it means something, you know.
Yeah, and I think you said as well that I think you said it was Matthew, Mark and Luke, all of these are very similar, but in them being similar, does that make it less accurate, or does that make it more accurate?
Yeah, it actually makes it more accurate, I think, because a document so long ago being so similar means that once we verified the sources, you know, we can say, okay, there's something serious going on here. It would be worrying if they were the same, like, word for word, because then that would mean that they were copied, or maybe, you know, somebody had just made them up. But the fact that they have these slight differences as well with what Jesus said or where he's gone or the order that things have happened shows that we have the different perspectives of people.
Yeah, and actually I think as well, like, even though there are those slight differences, like, that's not something that makes it less accurate. Like you said, that helps make it more accurate, because if it was word for word, you'd just be a bit like, surely this guy's just copied it from Matthew, just stealing all of Mark's work, yeah, or something.
Yeah.
ones you wanted to...
I think I'll just say, this is the last one I'll probably say. There's a couple more after this, but there's like a fairly basic one, which is just like... if there are historical events within it and the historical events didn't actually happen, then that's fairly, you know, obvious. It's like, for instance, saying, you know, back in 2022, the Queen died. If I then make a, you know, write something or write a paper and say, oh, you know, the Queen died a year later, well, it's just not true, because we have other documents
saying. Yeah,
everyone's
just gonna think you're like stupid.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. So... events such as Jesus's crucifixion, which we've had referenced before, or like Pontius Pilate, or even more obvious than that,
when Jesus was born,
Augustus Caesar took a census. Well, there you go. You know, we can find the census, or we know that when Augustus Caesar was Caesar, so we can sort of make sure that it all makes sense and like lines up with the historical story.
Yeah, and I think as well, I think it's important not to shy away from this stuff, because I think when I first became a Christian, I was a bit, I know it sounds silly, but I was a bit worried about looking at the historical stuff or the scientific stuff, because I was like, what if I look at this stuff and actually there's more evidence that it didn't happen? And I think don't shy away from it, because I think the more that you look into it and the more you really delve into this topic, actually, I've found that it's actually really grown my faith. And sometimes I think we can think that doubts are a bad thing, and like doubts are like a really bad thing if you're a Christian. But actually, I remember I heard a pastor, so he's a pastor of a big church in America called Craig Rochelle, and he said something actually that those people who doubt actually often end up becoming those people who actually have the strongest faith, because they question those doubts and they get in their heads about it. But eventually, the more you look at these doubts, it can really grow your faith. So I think it's good to ask these questions.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, it's up to each of us independently to sort of decide whether these gospels have any truth in them, or whether they don't, or whether you know we believe them to be fact. Yeah. And so that's a decision that we all have to make for ourselves. You know, it's a very personal decision, I think.
Yeah, and you've talked about these gospels, but are there any other gospels? Or
yeah, this is always quite a fun question, because I mean, you hear about like you wonder, you know, if Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John all wrote gospels, and on a quick side note, historically, the evidence suggests that the Gospel according to John, which is credited to John, the John who wrote the 1 John, 2 John, Revelation stuff, you know, it might not have even been John, and it was probably another disciple who actually died, and then his disciples finished it off, which is why it's written in such a different style. But yeah, so you've got this guy walking around, Jesus. He has the potential to be the most sort of mind-boggling, influential person, you know, in history. why don't we have more gospels, you know? And the answer to that really is that we do and we don't, which is always a fun answer. So the disciples themselves, they thought that Jesus was going to come back within their lifetime. And so they didn't actually write any of it down. So a lot of what we have written down is from the oral tradition. So like people just speaking it. And then when you get to about maybe 70, 80, 90 AD, you know, people start realizing, oh, we need to write these things down so we can preserve them for future generations. And you see that with like churches as well. So a lot of churches in England, the older ones around 800 or 900 AD, they're all made out of wood because people thought that Jesus was going to come back in 1000 AD. But then after 1000 AD, when he didn't come back, churches are more commonly made out of stone.
I had no idea about that. Did
there's all sorts of random stuff.
Did anyone know that? Because this is just on a side note. It's very fun being Caleb's fiance because he will tell you the most random stuff, and I'm just like, how
fact
do you
today.
Know that? I get like, feel like I'm getting so much cleverer. But carry on with what you were saying.
So we've got these sort of earlier gospels written around 100 AD. And these are, you know, Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. There are some other ones as well, like the Gospel of Thomas, but it's not included in the Bible because it's what's called a sayings gospel. So whilst each of the four gospels in the Bible, the canonic gospels, they all point to Jesus in some sort of way. So I think it's either Matthew or Mark point to him as sort of a suffering servant. John talks a lot about the more theological side of it and his relation to God and stuff. But a sayings gospel is basically just what he said written down. And so it doesn't really have a purpose to it as much. And it doesn't, you know, go into it any deeper. And so if you think you're trying to, you know, produce this collection of works, you know, that you want to be the cornerstone of the faith, you know, the early church fathers said, well, we're not going to put that in there because that doesn't really point to Jesus as anything. So
are there like, because this is what I always wonder as well, are there any women who wrote a gospel? I feel like I'm all like girl power, but I'm like, where's the women? Why haven't we written one?
Yes and no again. So that was the only one that I could find really. That was like actually similar. But then we get the introduction of this thing called Gnosticism. That's a big fancy word. And we hear it referred to by Paul, Gnostic preachers. And Gnosticism, as far as I can tell, I found this little sentence online that kind of sums it up. But when the early church fathers compiled the canon, they chose texts that were consistent with the Trinitarian theology. So that's the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And to make the cut, the text had to endorse the belief in a, you know, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, a created fallen man, Adam and Eve, and a battle between good and evil, the crucifixion, resurrection of Jesus, who was both Son of Man and Son of God, a virgin birth, the activity of the Holy Spirit, angelic beings. So there's all these different criteria that we say, you know, there's a biblical narrative that we see throughout the Bible now. And also that the books in the Old Testament and the New Testament are all inspired by God. And so contrasting to that, most Gnostics thought that Jesus was a supreme being who came to earth to bring gnosis, so that's the word for knowledge, I think, in Greek. And it was not about his sacrifice on a cross to bring absolution to the sinner. Gnostics claimed rather that Jesus was merely a human who attained enlightenment through knowledge and taught his disciples to do the same. Gnosis theology does not teach that Jesus is God, and it's sort of more like a new age belief of self-enlightenment. And I think a lot of people back then would have quite liked the idea of being in some sort of, you know, secret cult or having this secret knowledge that's passed down. And so one such gospel is the Gospel of Judas. You hear that and you're like, ooh, the Gospel of Judas. You know, what does that mean? And the theory there is that Jesus went over to Judas and he gave him all of this secret knowledge. And, he, you know, Judas was actually the inheritor and he was instructed to betray Jesus. And then, you know, he actually wrote down this, all of this, you know, secret knowledge, which was then passed down. But, like, it, you know, it doesn't really keep up with the historical narrative. And it also doesn't, yeah, well, it doesn't follow, basically. Yeah.
And just to backtrack a bit as well, when you were talking about the Gnosticism stuff, you were talking about the canon as well. What is the canon? Because I had no idea what that was.
For any of you nerds out there, you might hear about like the Star Wars canon and stuff like that. It's basically like the main bit. So like the Bible is the Christian canon. So it's all of the books included are the definitely recognized books. So if you're a Christian, you accept the Bible. You know, that's sort of the book of the faith.
Yeah, and there are some books as well, aren't there? So that we were in a church with your family. I think we were in Guernsey and we were in a Catholic church. And we were like, oh, look, there's a Bible. Just have a little mooch through. And I was like, where the heck did this gospel come from? I've never heard of this one. Yeah. I was like, never heard of this one. What are those ones? Why aren't they included in our Bible? Sorry, I don't know.
We're going down a bit of a rabbit hole. This is like, you know, several hours on the internet. But like, so that's called the Apocrypha or the Intertestamental Books, if I said that right.
Well done.
Big word. And it's basically this whole, all of these sort of written documents and like a collection of different books that were in the Bible because they were considered helpful to church clergy. So this was before the Bible was translated into English. And it was essentially sort of extra information. And it was taken out of the Bible, I think, around the 16th century or 17th. So when, like, some King James versions will have them in, some won't. You can find them online as well.
But why was it taken out, though?
Well, I think they just thought, you know, this isn't useful to your normal Christian guy. This is more confusing than it is helpful.
Yeah.
So when you hear about, like, I think there are, like, different hierarchies of angels or different types, or there's, like, different historical events. I haven't read them myself. If you're interested in them, you can find them online.
You can probably just Google them, right?
You can just buy them, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so generally they're not that, you know, if you're a newer Christian, they're not that helpful, probably more confusing. And so they were taken out.
So I guess we're going to come to a time of discussion in groups in a sec. But I just wanted to ask you, out of kind of the stuff that we have spoken about, what is kind of the like biggest hard-hitting evidence for you that for you you're like, yeah, that's like a big one for me that Jesus does exist?
I guess it's just the historical documents. When you have these people all writing about this one guy having existed and referencing to him as a person, you know, a real person, not as some mythical figure, it becomes very difficult to say, oh, he doesn't exist, you know, because it's like me saying, oh, you know, writing in my journal, tonight I went to Cafe Theology and did a talk. Gracie was there. And then in, you know, 200 years, somebody says, oh, we have this person, Gracie. You know, we know that there was a person called Gracie now. And it's sort of like that. We know that there was this person called Jesus. We know he started this, you know, sort of new religion. And it's sort of, what does that mean? You know, does it actually mean anything, or is it just a bunch of nonsense? And that's the sort of the follow-up question, sort of a if God, then what?
Yeah. Just another quick like book recommendation as well that's really helpful for this stuff. It's called Why Trust the Bible. It's by Amy Orr Ewing. She's like a doctor in theology or something. She's absolutely brilliant. And one of the chapters that she goes into looks at all the different like historical texts, and it's fascinating.
There's loads.
There's so many. But The Case for Christ and Why Trust the Bible, those are two really good ones if you want to go a bit deeper.
If God, Then What is also by Andrew Wilson. That's also a book that I read when I was a teenager, and that really helped me out. So
If God, Then What? Brilliant.
Yeah. So I hope you've all found that enjoyable as sort of an information dump. I know it's a lot to process. We're going to sort of have a discussion time now. Going to talk over that. And then after that,
We've got a discussion question now, if we're all right to have that on the screen. So if you just chat about that in your groups, get another tea, get another coffee if you want as well. But also in your groups, try and come up with one question that you can put on the side of one or more, one minimum.
Like
and then we've got some questions and we'll do a little Q&A after. So, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks.